This podcast is sponsored by Smartsheet, the cloud-based work management platform and best-kept secret of more than half the Fortune 500 companies. Learn more at smartsheet.com/crosscuttingconcerns.
How the app get made, explain your trade, what you love to do every day, the ins and outs of what your code's about, or the passion you know you can't live without. How's your data stored or sorted, transformed or imported? Let's chat a bit at a conference, and if it's cool, may re-record it. What framework do you like the best? Explain to us your unit test. Do you have a tip for JavaScript or a dev kit that we can tinker with? A process, a methodology, in depth, no apologies. Step up your code, stay on your toes, cross-cutting concerns. With Matt Groves.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment.
On your toes, Crosscutting Concern with Matt Groves.
I'm recording this podcast on August 18th, 2018. My guest today is a software engineer, psychology nerd, mental health consumer, and returning guest. Arthur Doler, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate you coming on. Why did you start speaking about mental health at tech conferences?
So I have a history of what I call lived experience of mental health challenges. I've had that pretty much since I can remember. I didn't, know what it was. It wasn't diagnosed until I was 15 or so, but I can look back and see how my entire life has been changed or, how it's been shaped by that lived experience. And lived experience for me, my definition is that it's having that experience, that memory or that knowledge that you've had a moment where you were not totally in control of what's going on inside your own head, your own thoughts, your own feelings, sometimes your own actions. That has always been a part of my life. And it's been a part that because of the way that we talk about or don't talk about mental health in this nation, and especially in very male heavy community of software developers, software engineers, it's something that I've always hidden away, something I've had to deal with, but never something that I was bringing to the fore. It caused me problems having to work around it. It's like trying to be Batman, except you don't get any fun stuff. Just trying to hide stuff from everybody else. To me, I started trying to be more open about it after seeing Ed Finkler give a talk, a recording of Ed Finkler giving his talk, Stronger Than Fear. That got me interested in starting to be more open about it. Because I'd really started coming to terms with it on myself. I figured it was time to do something for everybody else who was suffering. I started being more open about it at work. And then eventually I started talking about psychology and other things, cognitive bias and other interesting things at software conferences. And it was only natural at that point to start talking about mental health, what we do as in software and in our lives to, one, advocate for mental health, to normalize the experience that people have who have that lived experience. It's not that rare.
So Ed Finkler's actually been on the show before. I'm going to link to that episode in the show notes at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Definitely check that out if this is a topic that interests you. Would you mind sharing more? Was there a particular event or series of events in your lived experience that made mental health, especially mental health in tech, an especially interesting topic for you?
I started trying to start a peer support group for people in tech. But that was my initial goal, because I figured that was one way I could help start something where people can get together and talk about our experiences. Software engineers like to pretend that we're very different from a lot of other fields, et cetera, and that mostly is not very true. There's a lot of similarities between what we do and what other people do. But one of the things that I maintain is different is that software can change at the drop of a hat. Anything that is made in that digital creative space is something that we're becoming acclimated, that we're becoming used to. Being able to change instantly, that pressure, that drive, that need for people to change things instantly, that need for flexibility, that need for mutability is a pressure that I don't think a lot of other industries have. And I think it is part of what drives particular pressures in software. I wanted to start something where people could get together and talk about that and talk about their strategies and the way they deal with it. Just get to know each other and be in a space where it's comfortable and safe. In the process of that, I started getting involved volunteering for the Department of Health and Human Services, Region 6 in Nebraska, which covers a 5-county area on the eastern edge of the state, in a community development project, which is still ongoing. We're trying to build a community of people with that lived experience. And eventually, that's going to spin off into a nonprofit and hopefully continue to build and grow a real community. But it's meant to foster it and do the things that the community can't do for itself. And my experiences in that were very formative. I spent a lot of time talking with people and working with people and people who also have that lived experience and have been through a lot more stuff than I have. People hospitalized on a regular basis, people who've been forcibly detained, forced to take medicine. Experience that I'd had in my life, I'd always felt like, oh, well, you know, I have these diagnoses, but I'm not crazy. You know, I've never heard voices. I've never spent an afternoon talking to a tree or whatever. The experience for me of really getting to know these people and really talking with them, getting to know them as people, broke down that wall for me. And it wasn't me saying, well, oh, I'm the same as you. It was, no, you're the same as me. You're the same as all the rest of us. And it's one of the things that really started sticking with me. It's when you are having an episode, something like that, a lot of the times you know that it's not rational, but you can't do anything about it. If you're in the middle of a depressive episode, if you're in the middle of an anxious episode, sometimes you know that the thoughts are not rational. That really doesn't help you. That's one of the reasons why people being like, why don't you just stop worrying, is so makes you want to throttle them. I know that it's not rational. I know that I'm not experiencing something that is fully based in reality. There's not a ton I can do about it. My brain is off on its own path, and it's hard to control that from a rational perspective. That can be something that's hard to understand for software engineers. Those experiences that I had going, look, you know, these people, they're not their diagnosis. They're not things that are going on in their head. They're complex, multifaceted individuals. And one of those facets happens to be that sometimes they're not always in control of the stuff that's going on. That to me is what has made this very pertinent and very essential that we talk about these things. There's a totally valid reason to be talking about it in the sense of burnout and talking about it in the sense of trying to be resilient as teams and talking about it in the context of, you know, just personal health. To me, this concept of really trying to normalize that experience, making it okay to talk about those things because they're just feelings, and they're feelings that a lot of people have. 20% of Americans are going to have some mental health challenge this year alone. It's like 1 in 50 U.S. adults is going to deal with some mental health challenge in their lifetime.
I want to step back to something you said earlier about the unique nature of software and that it can completely change at any time. Oftentimes, as developers, as engineers, we get compared to other lines of work like bridge builders or building architects, things like that. People make comparisons between those two professions. I've often found those comparisons to ring very hollow. What do you think of that comparison? Do you think that has any effect on mental health in the sense that, well, look, these guys are building a building, and if they fail, the whole building falls down, right? So if you guys are building software, why can't you build it as well as the guys who build bridges and buildings?
There's a couple different levels you can respond to that with. I mean, this is a fun discussion. It was this discussion that used to, like you said, it kind of rings hollow at first glance. Now it's become a really fascinating discussion. They're building something. The laws of physics don't change. At least we hope they don't change. They have a set of technique. And this is something that actually has been discussed since the 70s. This concept of technique, capital T. Technique is this concept of formal techniques, formal processes that get you from point A to point B. Technique only works if the situation is consistent. Think about it like an algorithm. And it only works if your inputs are what the algorithm is expecting. Mechanical engineering, civil engineering, and a lot of other fields have had a longer time to do what's called constructing the secondary environment. Primary environment is the environment they're actually working in. The thing is that these techniques only work if, like I said, those inputs are consistent. So there are a bunch of secondary techniques that construct what the secondary environment, where the technique works. So the goal is to construct an environment where things are now consistent. So to take reality and all of the problems and messiness that exist in it, pare it down to its bare details, and then take that input and feed that into the technique, into that algorithm. What I think is really interesting is, as we see in software, these secondary techniques are developing over time. We used to do things very waterfall. We used to do things very the way things used to work for engineers. I think most of us would agree that waterfall does not work in 95% of, you know, development scenarios. And I'm being generous. What I think we've also come to the conclusion of is that Scrum-based agile is not always the right answer either. We didn't even have continuous delivery or continuous integration 10 years ago. These are things that we are building, these secondary tool sets that are designed to take the messiness of the world and get it to a place where we can start to build a technique that actually works. consistently and reliably. If you look at something like building a house, a bridge is a little different. I like the analogy of a house because we often think that houses don't change. And if you look historically, houses change over time really rapidly. You know, the houses tend to bud things like porches that get enclosed, sunrooms, and then those get built into extensions. And if you're lucky, they put a foundation underneath it. There's some really good examples of things like James Madison's home, where he built it originally. So it was like it was symmetric in two front doors because it was basically a duplex for him and his in-laws. And then at some point, they knocked down some of the center walls and this very unique, idiosyncratic construction. And we do that all the time. I think we need to look at what we can steal from these professions. Because what is interesting about a house is that it is organized. It is built in such a way that the things that change the most are the easiest to change. The stuff that you have, that is stuff that you can just move around. Slightly more hard to change than that is space. But the whole concept of like balloon framing, which is, you know, the standard stud and drywall framing that we use now, this whole concept behind it is that it's really easy to build another wall and to tear out a wall as long as it's not structural. Beyond that, it becomes easier to change the surfaces. We expose them via things like access ports. We have code that requires us to have junction boxes always available. You can't close a junction box behind drywall. It has to have an access port, etc. We've already started to design things. Similarly, it's a question of thinking about software to not isolate us from the change, but to control that change. If I get an order as a civil engineer to build a bridge, there's a lot of messiness that gets involved in that process. We want our job to be strictly technical, and it isn't. If you're working at an engineering firm, your job is not strictly technical either. There's cognitive work involved anyway to map that messy reality to something that you can then apply a technique. Long-winded answer. But
very thoughtful response. Well, let's get back to mental health a little bit here. Although I think all that ties into mental health, just as you're saying, it's not all technical work. Mental health is a topic that people have very strong feelings about one way or the other. They might be uncomfortable discussing, especially if they're not one of the 1 in 50 that have had, you know, a mental health issue recently, or if they're really lucky ever. So how have you been received when you talk about mental health at tech conferences and tech events? And how does that typically go? I mean, do you get any sort of negative feedback or pushback or arguments or?
Well, at a technical conference, usually I'm speaking at something that's multi-track. So the people have opted into the talk, and I have not yet encountered somebody who has decided it was worth their time to sit in and waste an hour just so they could argue with me. I have had a lot of people talk about it and be very, come up and talk about it afterward and be very happy that I'm saying these things. I was lucky enough to give my talk on mental health at NDC Oslo this year. I had a person come up to me and say, you know, it was struggled with, his diagnosis was obsessive compulsive disorder. And he'd struggled with that for a long time. And he said it was really nice to hear things that he thought in his head come out of my mouth. It's validating to see that happen. It helps to normalize that experience, which is part of why I talk about it. Part of, and my talk involves me literally talking about my personal experience for 16 minutes, to me is an essential part of normalizing that experience. Having people realize that they're not alone, they're not the only ones who are. That helped them be more comfortable in saying, look, this is how I feel.
So that's really good to hear that you're getting positive feedback on these and people are finding it useful. And that's similar to what I heard from Ed as well when he's talking at conferences. You know, I was concerned that people in the tech community have very strong opinions. I was concerned it might be as harmful as it is helpful for you to deliver these types of sessions, but it sounds like it's not the case. So that's really good.
I've spoken with people whose bosses, for instance, don't believe that mental illnesses or mental health challenges are real. And that can be really frustrating because at that point, it's almost like being gaslighted. You know, you start questioning yourself, your own personal experiences and challenges. I've just been lucky those people have not come to my talks. They are still out there. They do still exist. There are a lot of things that go into that. A lot of the times people want to believe they can control what's going on inside their own head because it's easy to think that, to think that you are in charge of what's going on in your brain. You're not, mostly. And that's a step, a realization that can be hard for people to understand, can be hard for people to accept. And it can lead them to, you know, kind of double down on, well, no, I'm in control of everything, so you should be of everything. I can do this. Why can't you do this?
I would challenge any listeners who have feelings along those lines to check out some of Arthur's writing and presentations, and the same with Ed. Check those out. Go in with an open mind. Consider that there's a possibility you might be wrong about something, and just go check that out, and then maybe you'll leave with some more useful information. But right now, I want to go on to something that's maybe a little more lightweight, lighthearted, and it's time for the game that's sweeping the nation.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for your favorite game from Cross-Cutting Concerns, where the question is it a JavaScript framework or something we just made up? Now, here's your host, Matt Groves.
Thanks, Joe. Now, Arthur, they give JavaScript libraries awfully funny names these days. In this game, I'm going to list three names of JavaScript libraries, and the goal is for you to tell me which ones are real and which ones are fake. And real means that they're listed on npmjs.com at the time of this recording. And just to keep things interesting, if you get all three of these correct, you're going to win a $5 gift card. So how does that sound? Are you very very much in the JavaScript world these days? Are you doing much JS development?
I have been. I have not in the last month or so, but before that, yeah, I was doing TypeScript.
Okay. Very good. So these are going to be not be the low-hanging fruit. I'm not going to ask you about React, Angular, things like that. These are going to be the real deep cuts. And I've actually got a theme. And as we're recording this, school is starting back up. So I thought I'd do a little bit of a back-to-school theme on this week's game. All right. So here are the libraries. I'll list them all first, and then you tell me which ones you think are real. The first one is called School Supplies. The second one is called Grades. And the third one is called Pencil. All right, you need those listed again.
No, School Supplies, Grades.
That's right.
Okay, Pencil's definitely real. Too common a noun to not be a JavaScript framework.
Okay.
And then I'm going to say Grades is also real, but I don't think School Supplies.
Okay, so just to recap, School Supplies you think is fake, Grades and Pencil you think are both real.
Yes.
I'm sorry, you did not win the game this week. School Supplies is not real. Grades is not real, surprisingly. I figured that would be a good, like you said, common noun. Pencil is real, though. You got that one right. That's actually a library for custom tags for Jade. That's what it's called. I'm not really sure what that means, but you at least got one right. So. Sorry about that. If you have suggestions for odd-sounding JavaScript libraries, real or fake, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com/contact, and I just might use them in the next episode. So thank you very much for playing, Arthur. Are there any resources you'd recommend to learn more about mental health in the tech workplace?
Definitely go check out Ed's video. I mean, just go through and watch him give his talk, The Stronger Than Fear. He does a really good job of just being empathic and open about it. You can watch my talk whenever that comes out. I recorded at NDC Oslo. They haven't gotten around to releasing it yet. Hopefully soon. It's called Let's Talk About Mental Health because it's about bleeping time. There are not a ton of good resources yet as far as mental health in the tech workplace. OSMI, Open Sourcing Mental Illness, which is the nonprofit that Ed started and that I volunteer for, has three ebooks that talk about, if you're a manager, what you can do, and then like if you're an employee, what your rights under ADA are, which is really important to understand and to sometimes be able to assert. Mental Health First Aid is also a really good, usually free course. It's an 8-hour course that teaches you, essentially first aid for mental health stuff, like what to do if your coworker is suddenly giving away all their possessions. Know, what to do if one of your coworkers is having an episode where they're not quite in touch with reality. It is put on usually by the states or by volunteers around the states. So if you just search for mental health first aid, there is a main site that will then direct you to your state's site, and that there will be a list of upcoming courses.
I'm going to put links to all these things in the show notes at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Is there anything else you'd like to promote as we wrap up the show?
You can hit me up on at Arthur Doler. Yeah, Twitter. You can hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm also at arthurdoler.com. Find me there if you're interested in having me, if seeing what I talk about. I talk about other stuff that's psychology adjacent, things about like cognitive biases, how that affects your retrospectives. I think that was what we talked about last time on the show. But also stuff like imposter syndrome, how to learn things, how your brain learns stuff. I'm available to come give those things at your workplace or meetup or whatever.
My guest today has been Arthur Doler. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2018. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this episode was made possible in part by Microsoft.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Smartsheet. Are your projects pulled off like Band-Aids? You need Smartsheet. No more pain, just simple, collaborative work management in the cloud from a beautiful UI. Learn more at smartsheet.com/crosscuttingconcerns.
It was recorded and mixed with the help of Camtasia Recorder, Skype, and Audacity. Music is by Joe Ferg. Check out joeferg.com, J-O-E-F-E-R-G, to listen to more great music.
Stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes. Cross-cutting concern with Matt Groves.